right now I'm in Los Angeles, and I have an agency here and an agency in New York and an agency in Dallas as well.
And what are these places like, Kay? Are they like big warehouse spaces? Are they, you know?
Yeah, they're really, they're pretty beautiful spaces. We have, we're very fortunate to have quite large spaces. We just moved into a new expanded space in Los Angeles, which is about 15,000 square feet. And it's, you know, I've been working with a good friend of mine, Cliff Fong, who's the owner of Matte Black and Gallery Half. And he's kind of one of the most significant interior, you know, interiors people. He specializes a lot in mid-century, which is kind of my personal aesthetic and taste. So we have, you know, a really beautiful environment that is, you know, incorporates mid-century design and art. And they're basically areas that we showcase and communicate all of the brands that we manage. Is really, there is that aspirational aspect that is integrated, and it's always been kind of a real goal and a beacon for me to create these kind of environments of real elevation. You know, I think more than ever, just, you know, with us existing in this really complex time of over-messaging everywhere, right, I think that it is, you know, more pertinent than ever to be so thoughtful about really integrating each step of the way of brand communication. You know, it's very strategic, like how we work, and analytical in terms of, like, really there's an art, you know, to growing the business, especially growing a business in a complex time like today, that there's a lot of, you know, erosionary tactics, you know, that are taking place in the market, obviously with, you know, online being so transparent in terms of, like, people marking down product or, you know, where margins get hit. So it really takes a lot of, like, strategy, you know, to create profitable businesses in today's retail world. And I think that's not a thing that a lot of people really spend a tremendous amount of time doing, you know. So
do you do a lot of surveys, or do you work with numbers
a lot? Yeah, tons. I mean, we manage, you know, we're looking at, you know, the same sell-through reports that they're looking at, like, every single week for a lot of our bigger partners. You know, we're in the stores once a week, you know, merchandising, talking to their staff, you know. We are, it's a lot, you know. We're working
Who goes by gut feeling?
What's that?
Does anyone go by gut feeling? Oh, I just know this is right the way in the movies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you do, but, you know, today, you know, the business is so complicated, and it is there's just so many factors that come into play today that there's just less flexibility for that. Like, yes, we all do, but, you know, it just requires a tremendous amount of, like, thoughtfulness and, to be honest, and work, you know, to get a brand to where you want to get it. And it requires partnership, you know. It's both our parts, you know. So there's a lot that just happens kind of after, let's just say, a retailer will say, okay, great, you know, we love this brand, we want to launch this brand with you. There's, you know, the whole other segment, which we're heavily involved in as well, with marketing and communication of the brand and strategies for marketing. And
so selling to large department stores is still the way to go?
Not necessarily. I think that, you know, we've always also kind of run our business so that there's always a very nice balance, you know. It's a tricky slope with a lot of the major department stores, like I said earlier, because, you know, I think the way that a lot of that business is happening is through, you know, promotional kind of activities to drive or ignite purchasing. But at the same time, when that does occur, there's, you know, a lot less profitability that, you know, that takes place. And so then it's about managing, you know, that business in terms of, like, how does that business stay and grow profitably when the profit margins are, you know, eroded. Like, bigger is not always better, and cheaper is not always better, you know. It's really have to think about a lot of things. You know, and all of those things have to be really well thought out before you, you know, before you create a brand, you know?
Mm.
Otherwise, it just becomes a knee-jerk kind of reaction and a response, and oftentimes a lot of brands do that and make the mistake or error, and, you know, that's the difference of a brand going left and kind of coming away from itself, you know what I mean?
Oh, I see, making those choices toward maybe cheaper this or cutting corners here or there tends to be that turn away from the path, you're saying.
Sure. Mm. I mean, that's not just the answer, you know. It's like, well, let's say you kind of decide you're going to create a brand at a certain level and, you know, you find, you know, hey, that's not so profitable, so maybe we'll figure out another kind of way to make this cheaper, and, you know, that brand all of a sudden starts to look and feel very different, you know, from when it... So you just ended up, like, moving yourself away from what the whole point of your brand is.
That really is a point that so many people get to, Kay. What can you do there? Because, you know, materials and workmanship have a cost that often is very difficult to reflect at the retail level.
Yeah, well... You know, that's the whole point, is that you really strategically kind of like lay out those things prior to getting yourself into that situation. And that's, I think, a part that not a lot of people really do, you know. The most important thing is just starting with a very clear focus and identity of something that, you know, you really believe in, or that is something that you really stand for. I think that, you know, the most compelling brands are ones that are truthful, and, you know, really all a great brand is really is, I mean, Steve Jobs said it best, but, you know, a great brand is something that you trust. So if it doesn't kind of originate or come from a place of truth, then right off the bat, you know, I think you're making it harder for yourself. You know, we live in a sea of perception, which we all know, of over-messaging, right? And as you said, everybody's kind of on that bandwagon of, like, you know, messaging of, like, look at me, I'm the best, you know, this is what I do, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, the consumer can really feel that, you know, the brands that are really truly the most compelling are the ones that are really truthful. So, you know, I always say that's the best place to really start, of just being very clear and, you know, about what it is that you're trying to communicate, you know, what it is that you are trying to offer.
What today would you call, what is innovative visual communication today?
Now that you're able to message, do you have an engaged, you know, community, right, of people that are really following what it is that you're messaging. So in other words, the goal at that period of time was to obtain engagement, meaning like the likes, let's just say on Facebook or Instagram. So, you know, then it got to that place, and then that got really oversaturated. And now we all exist in a period of where it is quite perplexing, because everyone is trying to figure out, okay, so let's just say you have the engagement. So let's say you have, you know, whatever, 1 million likes on Instagram, but who cares? Like, did that mean that, you know, that shirt that everybody was saying, amazing, 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 was that enough of an ignition for people to actually purchase? So in other words, is the engagement, you know, converting to monetization, right? Mm-hmm. That's the goal today. How do you do that? How do you, you know, provide, you know, or ignite or inspire your engaged community to purchase? That's what counts. You know, the successes of having the most engagement are really then being very clear and focused of who you are. So therefore, it becomes very clear and focused who your customer base is. And when that customer base feels that there is an intimate connection between the brand, whatever that brand is, whether it's public radio, a fashion brand, you know, whatever, you know, then you see the most conversion of monetization. Because I'll tell you why. Because then the messaging and the outreach feels intimate. And I think that, you know, we live in a time with all of, you know, the social media and the over-messaging that, you know, everything, intimacy is a really... it's a really coveted, experience that everybody is searching for, because there is, as much as we're connected by through social media, there's also a real disconnection, right? Because it's so much easier now for people to like send a text or send an email instead of like, hey, pick up the phone, you know? When's the last time, you know, we all make time and like have lunch, you know, with friends of ours or, you know, so I think there is this real, it's a very odd place because we're connected and we're disconnected. And, you know, there is that real innate that you see it, you know, or I do, like yearning, I think in, you know, especially for the customer of like, you know, of that feeling, like they actually made a difference, you know, whether it is for a fundraiser or whether it is for a brand or whether it is people want to feel good, you know, about their purchasing. They want to feel like they matter, that their dollar matters. You know, with technology, I mean, this is the part that's exciting and this is the part that's complex all at the same time, is that with technology, you know, it's just moving so fast, you know. So I can tell you that things that were really like cool and popping off, you know, 8 months ago or 6 months ago, now, you know, 6 to 8 months later, it's like not so much, you know, like they kind of just, the you know, the movement from relevant to irrelevant is just, it's quick, you know, quick, yeah. It's not like before, you know, that we didn't really have that kind of like level of you know, and the speed of technology. So there was just kind of, you know, there were things that kind of you sat in that period for a much longer period.
Where, Kay, is the fashion center now?
You know, I've always never really kind of looked at it that way, because I just really believe that, you know, talent is everywhere and talent is universal. And I think especially now more than ever with access and, you know, we live in a global, you know, we live in a global world, you know, that I don't think there is such a thing as, you know, a fashion center or something being relegated to a certain area. I think that is the beauty of technology, that, you know, you can be a creative and, you know, do your thing. You know what I mean? Anywhere.
But are people going to find you?
Well, I mean, I think that's what technology affords, right? That you can be in the middle of an island in the Pacific Ocean and, you know, create an amazing brand, you know, if you're thoughtful and smart and strategic and, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's not like you have to up and move to New York and, you know, to kind of like have any type of like credibility or anything like that. It's like, so.
Well, what would their, like fashion designers here, what would their first move be to expand beyond these particular shores?
Well, I mean, you would have to be able to obviously create and develop a product or a project that has legs in order to expand outside of these shores. So,
but then what would you do? What's the first thing you would do? Go to a trade show? Mail us?
That's one way, sure. Or, you know, or another way is just to kind of, you know, work on online to create a really great you know, understanding about your brand, you know, your identity and your concept. But yeah, definitely a trade show is one way, or, you know, align with a great agent, you know, or a great agency that has those relationships outside of obviously, you know, ones that you possess yourself.
At what point would someone come to you?
Well, I think that, you know, the point that there's a pretty solid infrastructure in place, you know, because at this point for us, we have a pretty solid infrastructure. So, you know, the projects that we tend to work with are ones in terms of that we can both be pretty demanding on each other. You know, it's like any good relationship or marriage or partnership that, you know, you really kind of want to find that person that's going to push you, you know, to bring the best out of you, but also has that foundational support that already exists so that there can be a lot of that push and pull and growth together, you know?
Yeah.
So whether it's art, whether it's design, whether it's fashion, whether it's food, they're all creative, you know, fields and afford creative interpretation. But, you know, a real kind of returning back, I think, to that having much more of an intimate and truthful and personal experience for the end user, I think is something that, I don't know, I mean, I always see as, you know, just myself, always a purist at heart, but those are the most compelling or meaningful experiences for me, you know? I think that there's a new, kind of a new interpretation of luxury. I mean, for me, like, you know, smaller, kind of more intimate, you know, more affordable also affords that too. So yes and no, right? You have the big mass corporate experiences that are on a high luxury level, and then you have the big, I mean, look at luxury brands, right? It's like those are all corporations, you know? There's like one still privately held luxury brand that exists, but everybody else is owned by some giant conglomerate. So, you know, I mean, I think the smaller types of experiences, yes, there are some that are maybe prohibitive in terms of, you know, mass produce, especially if you're talking about clothes or food. But there are still a lot of smaller intimate experiences, whether it's art, design, food, fashion, that are affordable and also offer, you know, something additional, like to the end consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You find yourself marketing primarily to the wealthy, though?
We don't. I mean, I think, you know, the brands that we manage are, you know, contemporary to advanced contemporary. So I think that, you know, I guess if you had to categorize just for the sake of category, you would say that designer luxury brands are really brands that are, right, like marketed to a customer base that, you know, has a different level of disposable income.
Yeah, it's hard for me to tell exactly where the cutoff of, you know, kinds of
it's
marketing
true.
Would
it's
be.
True. It's getting, it's getting closer together. It's getting more muddled. I mean, I think all the sectors are getting a lot more, you know, you're having luxury designer brands that are now offering opening price points because they have to grow a new customer base. You know, Noe, like everybody's so focused on that. So, you know, you have contemporary and advanced contemporary brands that, you know, have elevated price points and very affordable price points. You have fast fashion, mass brands that have, you know, same thing, right, are going both directions of the scale. So there is, it's true, it is a little bit more, getting a little bit more blurred, I guess, you know?
Oh, gosh, Kate. So fascinating. Really
it is,
fascinating.
Right? It's complex.
And with so much you know, relevance to so everything.
It is.
Everything people are trying to accomplish in society.
Yeah. True.
Wow.
True. I think so too. I think that's what makes it so fun, you know, in our industry, or what we enjoy so much, that it's not just, you know, this one-dimensional aspect of, like, you know, building a brand or managing a brand or, you know, just in charge of like sales, marketing, distribution of a brand. I mean, it really, every single thing is integrated, and it just requires, like, you know, both sides, right? Like not just creative and thoughtful strategy, but actual, you know, fiscal and brand building, you know, strategy as well. So it's really, you know, it's really dynamic, you know, what goes into kind of, or what we do kind of on a daily basis. Never a dull moment, Noe.
And, you know, I'll look at it more. I'll look at the industry more from now on as a reflection of us, our tastes, our wants. I mean, that's what's all measured in what's coming back at us. So I can.
Oh, yeah. And when you look at it, I mean, I think that's what's always so exciting about fashion, is that it's always, you know, it's always been a sector, a creative sector that has communicated so much more, you know. It's always been a sector, you know, that has communicated so much about, you know, especially for women, right? Like where women are in terms of, you know, what's going on in society, their place in society, lifestyle, you know, freedom, right? Dimension of their lives. I mean, I think that's always for me what is also so, what I love so much about, you know, fashion, especially for women, that it is, it's such a deeper reflection. I'm so excited about all of it. I mean, I think the incubation, I think about, you know, how active the state is becoming and really, you know, kind of supporting this push back to creating, you know, fashion or manufacturing as an industry, like in Hawaii.
You have the overview. So looking at what's going on here, what the goals are possible, are they likely? Are they what?
I think they're it's possible. I really do. I think that, you know, Bobby and I have had, you know, a little bit already of real time exchanges and conversations about the reality of really, you know, bringing back and developing, you know, manufacturing there, you know, in the state. And, you know, it's got to be really, really thoughtful and strategic. And, you know, maybe that's where hopefully we have all some value to add, you know, and maybe it's us helping to develop, you know, really creating, like, what's our brand, you know, as the state of Hawaii.